This is Fresh Air. Idealism helped lead Dr. David Hyden to Africa during the Ethiopian famine in 1985. But when he got there, he faced circumstances beyond his comprehension or control, and he felt he had become part of the disaster he was sent to contain. His 3 months in two refugee camps in eastern Sudan are described in his new book, Dust to Dust, A Doctor's View of Famine in Africa. The book also includes some of the photographs he took. The first refugee camp he worked at in Sudan was known as FAO 3. He describes it as having the sickest population, the worst political problems, and the least organized expatriate staff. There were 3 doctors for 13,000 people. The drive to FAO 3 from the airport took several days. The closer Dr. Hyden got, the more desolate the land became.
I felt like we had really left Africa and were driving on the moon. On one side of the car, there was just baked, black, cracked, flat dirt sort of stretching to the horizon. And on the other side was a raised mound of dirt that was from digging a canal, which was the water source for the camp. It was an irrigation canal, but it was the reason the camp was placed there. There were no trees. When we drove up to FAO 3, there were just rows of brown, dusty tents. And then we pulled into a compound where the expatriate health workers were living. So it was really an empty, frightening sort of... When I got there, I sort of emotionally felt if there was that it was like, this is a mistake. If there was some way to get back in the car and drive away, I mean, I would have been tempted to do it.
You expected some kind of welcome when you got there, but you didn't get any. And you said that the medical workers there weren't letting in newcomers outside their circle of pain. What was their emotional and physical states when you arrived?
I think that they had been exposed to something that people have no capacity really to be exposed to. I mean, they had been working nonstop in this really terrible place where half the children were malnourished and they were watching children die every day. And what they could do was severely limited by a whole host of problems. They were just really drained. At the time I resented it and I had something in the book about that. But in retrospect, I really totally understand it.
What were the most common medical problems that you found at the refugee camp, besides starvation, which was probably the predominant problem?
Most of the medical problems were starvation plus malnutrition plus something else. And in the people with malnutrition, there were all these things that you heard about prisoners of war getting in the Second World War, like beriberi and pellagra and scurvy and really terrible things that... There's just no excuse for people to suffer in this world. But on top of that, there was an awful lot of dysentery because the water was polluted. And initially, we didn't have the right things to put in it, chlorine. And initially, the tank that was set up to put the water in was just the wrong type. And it made the pollution settle, and then it drew the water from the polluted sludge, sort of. The other problems were respiratory illnesses, different types of pneumonia, and particularly TB.
Now, I want to get back to, you know, the diarrhea and dysentery that was so common at the camp because the water was polluted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you treat that when you're a doctor? Sure, you could give them antibiotics, but if the water's still going to be polluted, they're going to get the problem again.
Yeah, that's a great question. That gets back to sort of a fundamental issue in these types of situations, and that's priorities, what's most important. And doctors are really, doctors and hospitals, they're potent symbols of helping. But what's much more important is just providing people with clean water and decent food and shelter. And you can't, like your question, you know, sort of suggests, you can't treat people for dysentery if you're going to send them back out to drink the same polluted water. I mean, chlorinating the water would have properly and purifying it decently, filtering it, would have been more important than anything else we did.
Now, how come there wasn't chlorine?
Good question. How come there wasn't chlorine? How come the children weren't immunized? How come there wasn't enough food? These are all things that the world has in abundance. And that's really what I hope the book brings people to get a sense of. How can we let these horrors happen when for pennies we can prevent them? How can we let children die because of a couple pennies of chlorine? I mean, there just wasn't enough support. There wasn't enough organization.
Well, you left with the flu. You had bronchitis by the time you arrived in Sudan, and then within a week, I think, you got dysentery.
It was a week and a half.
Excuse me. So how sick could you be and still work?
I was actually pretty healthy the whole time, and the level of illness, I mean, most people got trivial things. Everybody got trivial things like sort of minor diarrheas, things like that. But there was a level of serious illnesses that made people incapable of being able to work. For instance, when one of my colleagues got bitten by a viper, she was out for 3 weeks. When another one of my colleagues got hepatitis, she was sent home. And there were three or four people, not from my specific camp, but from the different camps, that were evacuated to Switzerland with typhoid fever. Thankfully, nobody died. On the Thai-Cambodian border, actually, in 1980, someone died.
While you were at one of the camps in Sudan, there was a meningitis epidemic. And meningitis apparently can kill a healthy adult in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
How contagious is it?
It's highly contagious, and the frightening thing about it is that during an epidemic, a large number of people will carry the bacteria in their throat but not be sick, but they're able to spread it. So when you start seeing people get sick with meningitis, you know that even if you're very careful around them, that there are many other people that are carrying the bacteria that, you know, can spread it.
So what could you do to prevent the spread of meningitis in the refugee camp where the basic supply you had was antibiotics?
Well, we thought hard about it, and what we did, in fact, which worked, it was one of the things that was nice. We immediately tried to get a hold of vaccine. There is an excellent vaccine. And that was one of the frustrating episodes in the book. But finally, we did get vaccine. And in a period of 3 days, we immunized the entire camp, 13,000 people, and the epidemic ended. That was nice.
What did you do for yourself?
Same thing as the context. We took preventive antibiotic, and when the vaccine came, like the rest of the refugees, we got vaccinated. There was only one of us that had been vaccinated in advance, which was just poor planning. We all should have known better, and we should have been immunized before we went, because this region in Africa is known as the meningitis belt of Africa.
Mm. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Hyden, and he's a doctor based in San Francisco. He's worked in several refugee camps. In 1985, he spent 3 months in refugee camps in Sudan for people starving. This is during the Ethiopian famine. And his new journal of that period is called Dust to Dust, and it includes the photographs that he took in the camps. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. David Hyden, author of the new book Dust to Dust, about his work as a doctor in Ethiopian refugee camps during the famine of 1985. You took a vacation from the camp for a week, and you decided not to go back. Why couldn't you go back?
I don't know. I felt like I couldn't face it again. I wanted to keep working, but I just felt like I couldn't spend another day in FAO 3. It was really painful. I felt like I'd failed, but I ended up going to another camp and continuing my tour of duty.
After your vacation, you went to a different refugee camp in the Sudan. You went to a camp called Wad Khali. Am I pronouncing
mm-hmm.
that
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that was right across the border from Ethiopia. Was that a better place for you to work?
By all means. It was a very much more humane environment. The living situation for the expatriates had been organized much better. I mean, we had regular meals. Everybody had their own little thatch hut. It was along the riverbed of the Atbara River. It's the last tributary of the Nile. And there were just the scenic components of Africa. I felt like I was no longer on the backside of the moon, sort of buried somewhere. I felt like I had returned to Africa.
Mm-hmm. What's it like kind of psychologically to have, you know, your own hut and to have decent meals every day when a lot of people around you who you're there to serve don't have it? Is there a feeling of kind of guilt that comes along with that, or were you reconciled about that?
That's a good... There are conflicts, and they sometimes you don't see them, and then they pop out at all times. Like the first night there was a tropical rain. We didn't know whether the rains were going to come. They'd failed several years, and then it rained. And I was lying in my hut, and there's this joy of seeing it just pour. And then it got a little cold, and I got another sweater to wear. And then all of a sudden I started thinking that right down the way, there were 40,000 refugees, and they were living in these little thatch huts that were built to keep out the sun and wouldn't keep out rain at all. And they were lying on the ground, and the ground was this type of clay that turns into mud. And I just sort of lay there. I mean, it was... So, you know, you sort of accept what you have, and then periodically you get these rude reminders, and you sort of take pause.
One last question. Do you feel still kind of psychologically affected by the experience? How much is it still with you?
I'm a different person. I'm vulnerable to different things. So, yeah, I'm psychologically affected from it. But I think changed, really.
Mm-hmm.
For the better, I would hope.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
David Hyden's new book, Dust to Dust, A Doctor's View of Famine in Africa, is published by Temple University Press. Dr. Hyden lives in San Francisco. This is Fresh Air.